everyone. Welcome to the Podcast Insider. My name is Todd Cochran. Of course, joined by my co-host, Mr. Mike Dell. Mike, how you doing?
So far, so good, as we always say here. But yeah, all's well up north.
And, you know, beautiful weather here last few days. Had a little rain, but summer is here. And as I remind people that live in the area where actually there is winter, winter is coming. So try to enjoy the summer the best you can. But we have a great show lined up for you today. We've got a big bunch of news items, some best practices. We've got some important blueberry news. We've got an interview today from a gentleman down in South Africa. He's the Urban Astronomer Podcast. Pretty excited to interview with him. And then we've got some support stuff today as well. Hey, so Mike, the Podcast Academy Board of Governors has been announced. So they've actually put that online. And, you know, the co-host of the new media show I do with Rob Greenley, Rob has been announced the chairman over there.
Right. Yeah, I saw that. And again, you know, they got the whole list of officers and governors up there on thepodcastacademy.com. So, and they're also opening up membership, which, you know, for a while there, they were saying it's going to be like $100 a year or something like that. Looks like if you get in early, you can get it a little cheaper.
So the word on the street I got from Rob was the first year is going to be $50. The second year going forward will probably be $100. But what they've really done here, I think, and I kind of applaud them, is that the Board of Governors are actually helping to fund this as well. Each of those are responsible for putting in, I don't know how much cash. I'm speculating how much they're required to put in, but they're holding an office for some of them for 2 years, some of them for three, and then they'll have a full voting thing. They've already figured that out. Membership is going to be open to podcasters, people that do production work, people that are in the podcast industry. Mike, you'll be able to join even if you weren't a podcaster. Right. There's a whole litany of folks that'll be able to join, and there'll be disclosures if you're working for a podcast company, so people will have full transparency in that instance. So I think they've done a good job here, and I give Rob credit. I don't know where he's going to find the time, to be honestly, and working for the company he does and do this at the same time. But they're going to at least have someone on their governor's board that fully understands indie podcasters. Now, a few of them have indie beginnings, but most of them, the folks on this board are commercial: PRX, Tenderfoot TV, Sony Music,
iHeart, Apple,
Apple, Stitcher. And I guess that's a good thing, but at the same time, we wanted to make sure the big thing we were worried about was independent podcasters having a voice, and they made Rob their chairperson. So I think they're pretty serious in understanding that 99% of the podcasting space is made up of indies. So, you know, I'll be joining. I just kind of, as a full way of disclosure here, I'll be joining and encouraging our team members to do so as well. But anyway, we'll see what happens with this. But I think they're going to be on to some, you know, some good start here. And anytime, time will tell what how this works out. But they're going to be focused on education to begin with, and then go from there. And of course, some sort of an awards thing too.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Their awards are going to be early 2021, I guess, is
what they say. 2021 or 2022, somewhere around there. Yes, we'll see. But again, membership's going to open. It's going to be $50, and they're going to have a webinar, I guess, on it around the 18th for people to ask questions. But there's some other news out there as well. Pod News talking about the most popular podcast apps on Android. And, you know, we have our kind of our own list here, but, you know, they've come up with a list, download rank ratings and comparison. It's an interesting look at the entire Android podcast app ecosphere, because I'm seeing apps on here I didn't even know about. So 17 apps. And Podcast Addict has a huge number. I don't see Overcast. Overcast doesn't have an Android app?
Yeah, it does not. That's iOS only.
So Podcast Addict is obviously number one. Google Podcasts, accordingly, it says is number, and iVox, I don't even know what that is number two and three respectively.
Yeah, Dog Catcher, and you know, I've heard of it, but I didn't think
yeah.
It was
so there's a few on here that I'm just kind of like, wow, maybe I need to reach out to these folks. But anyway, some ratings and ratings per day and downloads per day can kind of tell you who has what. And speaking of ratings, if you love PowerPress, make sure you give us a rating on PowerPress. But you know, there was another article on Pod News that talked about the split of Android and iPhones, and globally Android dominates. So again, as a podcaster, don't forget about your Android listeners out there. Here in the United States specifically, it's 56% are on iPhones and the rest are on Androids. But again, don't forget those Android listeners out there. And of course with Google Podcasts now, it's a big deal.
Certainly. And you know, just think about this, you know, if you share your link to Apple Podcasts, you're automatically losing about half of your potential audience, if not more, worldwide.
Yeah.
So, you know, make it so that the Android people can subscribe just as easy, and our subscribe on Android link is a really good way to make that happen.
I have I was kind of surprised, Larry King, I think he's like almost 90, he's 87 or 88.
Yeah, he's up Larry, there.
Yeah, he used to be an anchor or have an hour-long show on CNN about 10 years ago. Yeah, but he signed
that, he was a radio guy for years and years and years.
So he signed a $5 million deal to launch a new celebrity-focused podcast. And what's kind of funny, his son is one of the owners of the company. So no insider trading going on there at all.
No, of course not. But, you know, it's so great, you know, see him back in audio, because that was his big deal before he got on CNN, his radio show. I remember it back in the, 70s, 80s when I was a kid, listening to Larry King in the middle of the night. And he, he always had something interesting to say. I don't know what he's up to these days, other than I see him on a lot of infomercials, but good to see him back in audio.
I did kind of laugh though, because in their press release, it says it's his first podcast. Well, it's not. When he was on CNN, he had a podcast on CNN and promoted it heavily on CNN. Yeah. When podcasting, it was still kind of like still growing. So I kind of laughed about that they said it's his first podcast.
And he had another one with Podcast One with his wife. So yeah, this is his third.
It's not his first podcast. So creators of S-Town settle a lawsuit with the family of John McLemore. So I've been following this too much. Did they say how much they settled for? Probably not.
Yeah, it doesn't say in the article what they settled for, but it sounds like they, finally got it settled. This has been going on for a few years. The basic gist of it is the main subject of the podcast died right in the middle of the production. And you know, they kept going with the podcast, talking about his, his death and what was going on afterwards. And apparently the family wasn't real happy with it. So anyway, they did finally settle it. Doesn't say exactly what they settled for.
It's probably some monetary sum. But if you start doing stories about people, and you don't have the correct releases and permissions, it can turn into a bit of a legal brouhaha. So, you got to think about that when you're doing stories on specific individuals. Hey, if you're watching us today on the Blueberry Podcasting Group or anywhere else, say hello on Facebook. I know there's a few people watching live, so appreciate when you check in with us and just give us a wave. Definitely appreciate it. Those of you listening, we always want to hear from you as well. There's the comment section on podcastinsider.com as well. So there's a new podcast app, another one. So this is number 86, I think.
Yeah,
it's a bunch being launched, a new kind of podcast app.
Yeah, the weird thing about this one that, you know, and of course it hasn't out yet, so, you know, I got my name on the beta list, and I'm pretty sure you probably do too. I heard it from you guys talking about it yesterday on a new media show, but it's called Morton Just, I think. I really don't know what the, it doesn't really say what the name of the app is, but the gist of it is you don't really subscribe to a particular show, you subscribe to a topic. And then when you hit play on it, the whole app sort of changes to fit the show you're listening to. So it's interesting, for sure. I don't know as I really care for the subscribe or the lack of subscription, because, you know, how do you keep an audience on something like that?
It kind of reminds me of the TikTok implementation, where, you know, you are on TikTok and you heart a video, you flip up and you're watching another one, you flip up. So, you know, but podcasts are not typically short bits. They're long. So I don't necessarily think the idea of them pushing some other content to me is going to completely, I listen to podcasters, not the content. I listen to their shows for their content, but I'm primarily subscribing because of the host and the relationship I have with them. And it kind of leads into this next story. And Adam Curry, one of the podfathers, he wrote an article about the Joe Rogan deal and other podcast topics in there. And I actually asked my entire Blueberry team to read that article, because there's some takeaways in there that I'm not a big guy on, like, using words like mastermind or tribe, or to me, that's kind of, I don't know. I guess I'm old school, but, you know, the tribe thing, I guess I don't have as much of issue with. But if you think about your listeners, now I call my listeners a family of listeners, but for some shows, they're more intertwined. I look at the show that Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak do. It's the Daily Source Code. They call their fans producers. They actually help produce the show. They submit content. They have subject matter experts that are listeners, you know, and it's really this whole ecosphere. And it actually got me thinking a little bit, and maybe some things I'll actually start trying to produce on my show, or even this show. You know, this show, we have a lot of podcasters that are experts in specific things. Maybe you're a LinkedIn expert. Maybe you're a YouTube expert. Maybe you are a business consultant, or whatever it may be. If you're listening to this show, we haven't really tapped into this that much, Mike, but we should be saying to this audience, bring your expertise of what you know, what your core or what your subject matter expertise is, bring it to this podcast. If you think we should be talking about LinkedIn and how to promote your show, then let's have you on the podcast and let's talk about that. We got a great interview today with this Genesis story, but we really haven't tapped this audience for their expertise in the topics that you and I are not. So it's about that tribe building. So it really kind of, so if everyone gets a chance to read this, Adam Curry, did you get a chance to read it yet, Mike?
Oh yeah, definitely. And, you know, he's got a point, as far as, you know, building a community around your podcast, I guess would be a better word than tribe in my estimation. But, you know, look what Adam and John have done with No Agenda. You know, they call everybody producers, and everybody's, you know, they have these unique titles of what their listeners are. I have another friend that does a show called Airline Pilot Guy, and he has his APG community, and he gets more interaction than any podcast I've ever seen. It's amazing how, you know, if you do build a community around your show, that you know, you get a lot of you know, a lot back from it, as well as, you know, providing a lot of what do you call it? Value for your audience. And, you know, we'd love to have that. We call you guys insiders, you know.
That's right. Podcast insiders, so giving us information and, you know, how to improve. And what really, and I've challenged the Blueberry team is, you know, what can we do as a company to help you grow more audience members? And thinking about some of the stuff that Adam kind of portrayed in this, it's one of those articles that, you know, it's going to take me a few days, and I call it percolating. And, you know, if you have that same mode, ladies and gentlemen, it's like if you read something and you have that initial kind of thought, that little light bulb that pops outside of your head, and you're like, and then a couple of days later, you can come up with some action plans. So love to have you all read that and provide us some feedback. And if you are as I like to refer to them, subject matter expert on something, and you think it would fit well into the show, let us know. We'd love to have you. Love to have you on. But, you know, every once in a while, Adam just kind of like knocks one out of the ballpark. And I think that one comes pretty close going the distance.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And, you know, and I like your name for that, subject matter expert. You know, that's a thing from Naval Aviation, as I remember
It is. It's a holdover from my Navy days. A SME. We called him a SME. I'm a SME. I'm a subject matter expert, and I'm here to help. Yeah, Air Force, here to help things sometimes maybe wasn't so positive.
Yeah, I don't think the Air Force had a specific term for that. They just
tech reps or whatever.
Ask the smart guy.
Yeah. So let's talk just a little bit about best practices. And Mike, you've come up with an interesting topic today for this. Yeah. And it's talking about teaching your listeners about podcast listening. So where's your angle here on this?
Well, my thought was, you know, a lot of times people, you know, they find a podcast. Now, this audience obviously is going to be podcasters, and, you know, some of our, you know, other shows, the same thing. You know, it's more, you know, podcast savvy people listening to us. But, you know, on your show, you know, you may not have that. So, you know, somebody may one off find you, you know, hey, you know, Joe says to go listen to this podcast, and they go to the website, they hit play, and they, you know, they just go hit to the website and keep hitting play. But, you know, give them a little more education about it. Even if your show's not about podcasting, it never hurts to educate them about how you listen. You know, talk about it. If you're an avid listener of podcasts, you know, spend a little bit of time. Say, you know, I use Overcast, and, you know, I like to look for shows here or there, you know. Something like that. You know, also make sure that you have a subscribe page on your site just to explain a little bit more about, you know, the advantages of subscribing and you know, what possible apps, you know, you could use if you were just sitting there on the website. I don't know. It was not a well-formed idea. So I figured it was a good discussion point for here, you know, just, you know, educate your audience a little bit about the technology and how you use it.
You know, I think you're on there, Mike, to that is on, you know, sometimes, and I do this in the beginning of my show, I always tell people, hey, go over to, if you're not subscribed, if you're not part of the family, you know, go over to my website, and on the right-hand column, you'll see the subscribe buttons. But I think it takes a step further in basically giving your audience some ideas on how to consume, you know, ways you can consume podcasts. And maybe you've got someone that's listening to you on a smart home device.
Right.
And maybe they haven't considered listening via an app or maybe they're listening on an app and they haven't considered listening on a smart home device. Or, you know, you may have your show distributed in different locations and you know, you want to give them those options to let them know where your content is and where other podcast content is. Right. I think it's always important to do that. So, yeah. So talk about how you listen to podcasts. Tell them how to subscribe. Again, have that subscribe page. That's got to be the key, right?
Yeah. And yeah. The subscribe page is a great thing. Right in PowerPress, we have a thing that'll generate a basic subscribe page, and you can go in there and edit it. And Mackenzie had a really good idea when we were doing show prep this morning. She said, well, you know, what about doing like an Instagram story or a YouTube video? You know, just explain, you know, hey, when you get to the website, you know, if you're on an Apple device, click this. If you're on an Android device, click that or that. And, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, there's a lot of little opportunities we can have to, you know, promote podcasting. I mean, your show may not be about podcasting, but it is a podcast. So, you know, why not?
Yeah. I think too is often I'll say, You can subscribe on Google Podcasts. I'm subscribed on Android. Go through this. And I said, if you have no idea what I'm talking about, if I've completely confused you, there's a more info button on the page. It'll go in there and describe this in more detail. And I'm surprised by the number of people that say, hey, thanks for sending me to that page, because I was able to go and look and what it really means to subscribe to a podcast and give that information to me in a little more succinct way. So anyway, very, very cool topic. So I think you're right on point there. Let's talk a little bit about Blueberry News. The big day is almost upon us. I'm really excited about Monday.
Yes. PowerPress 8.3 is in final beta, and poor Ben, Dave and I have been picking him apart a little bit. We're working on documentation and whatnot, but it should be all polished up and ready to fly on Monday.
And probably by Wednesday, we'll have 8.3.1 out. Yeah, but
maybe.
So here's the deal. If you're a PowerPress user, would you say this is a very fundamental update?
Oh, yeah. It's the look and feel of the whole thing changes. Don't worry. Everything is there. It's just in a little bit different spot, hopefully a more organized spot, and it certainly looks a lot nicer.
Oh, it looks beautiful. And it is definitely a complete, we have gutted the UI. There are telltale signs here and there of, you know, it tries to run home to mama a couple of places.
Yeah.
But the majority of it, the high majority of it, has been gutted. And the UI UX completely has been renovated. So be prepared. Monday, when it's out and when you update it, you'll get a good look on this. And we're really excited. It's a sign of things to come, because what you see in PowerPress today or Monday is what you will most likely see pretty much duplicated on the PowerPress, on the podcaster dashboard at Blueberry, probably in a few months. So anyway, very, very exciting stuff.
And when it releases, I should have all of the video tutorials done. Dave's working hard on the written documentation, so we should be ready to fly on that. They wanted to put it out today.
So we said, let us get caught up on all the documentation, because I think we picked it apart a little bit.
Yeah.
There might be a few screens here or there. Not a lot of feedback from the beta testers. So that's either a good or bad sign, people are either using it or not using it.
Yeah, we'll see. So anyway, sorry to cut you off on the next one.
It's no problem. Okay, so blog, top 10 things to do after you publish your first episode. And that's an article that we put out on Monday. And it's getting good traction, getting some feedback as well. So again, the top things to do after you publish your first episode, or in my opinion, any episode. So definitely check that out. I think that's give you some good tips. There's takeaways. Everything that we put up, folks, online, like this podcast, everything we do, we just want you to find one takeaway from the show. Take one thing and implement that. We hope that you'll find one thing of value as you listen to the show. That's what I try to do with any podcast I listen to. I try to get one piece of value out of it. Now, while Ohio has technically kind of opened up for businesses to open, we've basically put a plan forth for our team, and we're slowly opening up the office. We have risk mitigation and everything in place. We've got a few people that would like to come in a couple of days out of the week, and so we're slowly opening the office and not requiring anybody at all to go back to work. But some people want to get out of their house and go to the office and work, and instead of being stuck at home. Some people it's a husband wife team. They're both sharing a limited space. And so I understand all that is good. They want to kind of get some air, I guess the best way to say it.
So elbow room.
Yeah. You know, and that's why I come to, my isolated office here is to get out of the house too. Now, Mike, you're building a brand new, you're building a studio, right? Or even a workplace, right?
Oh yeah. I'm building a little outbuilding, actually. So it's going to be a shed in my backyard. I know that doesn't sound very glamorous, but it'll be really nice when it's done, and you won't hear that sump pump going off in the background every 4 minutes.
But it's not going to be a shed. It's going to be like a little mini office studio, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's going to be drywalled and heated. And, nice. Probably get some audio moot panels and have air conditioning, the whole nine yards. So
fantastic.
I'm looking forward to that. That's going to commence this weekend, at least the initial phases. I'm figuring it'll take a month and a half or so.
Nice. One thing you're going to have to do, though, is you're definitely going to have to insulate that bad boy, considering where you live.
Oh, yeah. It's going to have 2x6 walls, and it'll be well insulated. I should be able to heat it with a candle.
All right. So what we're going to do now is we're going to jump to our interview. And for those of you listening via podcast, you get to hear it. Those of you live, we'll be back in about 15 seconds. But for the rest of you that are subscribed to the show, the Urban Astronomer Podcast by I had a very difficult time pronouncing his name correctly. It's Vosfeld. I think I just got it wrong. Alan Vosfeld. Alan, I apologize if I've destroyed your name. I don't think I got it right even then, but it's, South African, pronunciation. I definitely didn't do good, but, I think yesterday the SpaceX launch did not happen. Saturday it's happened. So I think it's an appropriate topic talking about space and science. So here's the interview with Alan. Everyone, welcome Alan from the Urban Astronomer Podcast. Alan's hailing from South Africa. It's quite late there. So Alan, welcome to Podcast Insider.
Thank you. It's been great to be here.
And I fudged a little bit because at the beginning I was trying to pronounce your last name. Maybe you can do that for the audience because I was definitely destroying it. So that's why I just introduced you by your first name.
It's Alan Vosfeld.
There we go. Welcome to the show. And I tell you, you're the second interview that we've had from someone from South Africa. And I'm excited to talk to you today. You've been doing your show 3 years, and it's always nice to get a mix of people on the show that's been doing a show a long time, short time. You're kind of in that middle. You've made it past the 2 year mark, which a lot of podcasts never do. But why is it a way of introduction? Just give us a little background and then we'll talk about the show a little bit.
Sure. Well, I mean, I was running a blog called The Urban Astronomer since 2009, I think it was. And that was about the time I started listening to podcasts. And over the years, I thought, oh, that sounds like fun. I'd like to do that. I got things to say. And for years and years and years, I sat there, I got to do this. I'm definitely going to do it. And finally, about 3 years ago, about 5 years ago, I started a podcast with my wife where we just talked about parenting because we have quite a large family. And that didn't really go anywhere. We got about 12 episodes out, I think, with these cheap little USB headsets that were not actually that cheap, but definitely cheap quality.
So right.
The sound wasn't great. And then I did a bit of travel for work and I got a bit of a travel bonus out of that. And with the money, I bought some decent microphones and I started this show to go with the website. And very soon the blogging basically died out. And now it's just hosting the podcast.
It's interesting because I've been blogging really from the beginning. And now I don't blog, but I pay people to blog. And I'd largely do it to keep driving Google traffic to the website. But, the podcast is the main focus for me as well. So when you started the show, then did you just really kind of carry on with the topics that you were covering the blog, but just talk about them instead?
Not really. I mean, same overall topic, astronomy and space and science and stuff. But in the beginning, it was mainly an interview format, starting largely with people that I knew in the astronomical community, members of the society and what have you. And mostly calling them over Skype. And I spent quite a bit of time trying to find software that would let me record from Skype that wasn't going to cost me anything.
That's right.
Eventually found something called VoiceMeeter, which very tricky to work with. But if you can get it right, it works quite well.
Yeah, today I'm using a Rodecaster. And that's what I'm, so that seems to be the tool. If you can afford it, that's the tool that everyone's kind of migrating to. So it started off as an interview show. I'm assuming it still is today.
Yeah, over the time I switched to giving these long-winded explaining how things work. A common thing in these astronomy shows is people talking about what you can see in the sky this week, which I always wanted to avoid because once that date is passed, then the whole episode's useless. Mm-hmm. You know, and, who wants to go listen to an old sky guide, what you could see 10 years ago?
Oh, right.
10 years. So explaining and basically showing how clever it was, really, and interviewing people. And today, I now alternate between the two, about 50-50. So it'll be an interview show, explaining show.
Is the astronomy, is that your profession as well, or...?
No. It's been a passion of mine as a hobby. I've managed to, I think, fool people into giving me director's positions at the Astronomical Society of South Africa. I even studied it for a while, but no, I've never had a job as a professional researcher.
It's nice to be able to podcast about your passion, isn't it? Instead of having to podcast about your job.
Wow, can you imagine?
Well, it's kind of funny because I do. I do podcasts about the podcasting space. So I have, we make fun of it. You know, we have fun doing it as well. So I do two shows on that, but I do enjoy being in the space. I chose to be in this space. So if I guess for me, sometimes people's regular day jobs aren't the things that they're always the most fun about or their passion. But so that's kind of a funny combination. So being that you're, you know, the Southern Hemisphere, does your audience, well, they're not coming to you for Skywatch stuff. So they're basically, you're providing information. So you probably got a pretty good worldwide audience then, don't you?
Yeah, my largest audience is American. Then it's European, UK, Australia. So many South African listeners, but that's largely because the local podcast audience is quite small. Yeah, we struggle with expensive data costs, slow internet. The vast majority of the population, I mean, asking them to download a 50 megabyte MP3 is just too much money for them.
That's interesting. And that runs, I see that in many parts of the world, in Asia specifically, you know, people don't necessarily have data plans. They have what they refer to as a load, and they get just so much amount of data. And when they burn through it, then they got to go spend more money. It's not like they have a fixed amount and then they throttle you down. So it is always interesting to hear people's data connection challenges. Even today in America, people probably take it for granted that they can just, you know, get any media they want almost at any time on a mobile device. But yet, even in South Africa, that's not the case. It's very interesting. It's probably a worthy of a lengthy discussion in itself, but... So far then, most of your audience is, as you said, in America and other places. What type of feedback are you getting from the show?
Not much. Not much at all. The occasional email, the occasional social media comment. Probably once every 10 episodes, I'd say. Very little.
So you don't, that's got to be, a lot of podcasters challenge with that reverse engagement. So I'm assuming then that you're doing this because you're passionate about it and you love talking to smart people about the space. So is it a show that you do more for yourself than specifically the audience?
You know, there is a bigger, more noble, if I can even call it that, how pretentious. it's a more noble goal, which is I'm trying to promote astronomy as a thing that we do in South Africa, because I think our astronomical heritage is heavily underrated. The number of discoveries done here, partly because of our position in the Southern Hemisphere, mm-hmm. partly because we had world-class observatories going back to the 19th century. In fact, the local main observatory is having its 200th anniversary this year. So there's a lot of that going, but at the same time, we don't see ourselves as a scientific nation. I think the rest of the world, outside of astronomy at least, don't see us that way either. And I just wanted to try and promote that, even though I don't have such a huge audience.
Right.
I would like them to. I would like to just show off what we can do. So, like my interview guests, anybody connected to South African astronomy. So researchers who have come from overseas to observe here, members of local astronomy clubs, local researchers, people, engineers building the telescopes that we've used, that sort of thing.
You know, one thing, I lived in Hawaii for 25 years, and of course, Hawaii's got some great observatories, and obviously there's some stuff going on now politically where they don't want one of the biggest ones that are being built on Mauna Kea. It's, you know, goes back to local, you know, it's a big issue in Hawaii trying to get new observatories built. But I didn't think about, you know, the position in the sky has a lot to, and I'm not an astronomy, I'm a fan of space. I don't have a telescope. What is the difference then from a view standpoint for maybe someone that's listening you know, there is definitely a different sky view, but the tilt of the Earth kind of has some overlap to a certain extent, but not completely, right?
Well, if you're standing on the North Pole, then you can see the north half of the sky, and that's all you'll ever see. There's a little bit of variance because of seasons and right. You know, the tilt of the Earth. Yep. Right. And if you're on the South Pole, then the opposite half of the sky. And as you move closer to the equator, your overlap starts to grow. But where we are, we can see things that nobody in Europe, nobody in America, North America, and most of Asia will ever see. So there's a large portion of the sky that's invisible from here, you know, South America, Australia, New Zealand.
Haven't the, and I don't think people think about this a lot, but, you know, when they launch Hubble, that just opened up everything. So it was like everyone could see everything. But when you're constricted to a land-based telescope, again, there's only a certain portion of the sky that you can see. And I don't think a lot of us think about that. We're on this big marble spinning through space, and we forget that there's a view on the opposite side of the planet that we all can't see because everyone's here, you know, they talk about the Little Dipper, Big Dipper, you know, all that stuff. But you guys probably have a completely different star look as well. I'm really showing my ignorance here.
No, you've got it exactly right. I mean, I have never seen the Big Dipper, but you've never seen the Southern Cross.
That's right.
Right. So, yeah.
It's common sense, but you got to think about, yeah, that's a different view. People are just rolling their eyes right now, listening to this show. And we'll get some comments back saying, Todd, you're an idiot. I am kind of curious, though, is there a lot of money being spent in South Africa on new telescopes and new observatories and stuff? Or
new telescopes are coming in all the time. These days, not huge ones. I think the last big telescope that was built, well, the big optical telescope was SALT, the Southern African Large Telescope, which is a 10-meter, so it's one of the largest single instruments in the world. And that was, because of the design, was built extremely cheaply. I think it was something like $10 million or something. There's, on the radio telescopes, of course, we are getting our half of the Square Kilometer Array. And that's, I don't know what that costs. That's billions and billions. But these big things tend to be funded internationally.
Yeah, globally.
Many, many countries all putting forward in. And in return, they get guaranteed a certain portion of access for their researchers to come and have a look and request data. As a host country, we also get a lion's share, worth more than what we're spending.
Right.
But that's because it's our land and it's our community. So I'm not having to go without cell phones because it's a radio quiet area.
So here in the United States, we're getting ready to have a big space event. We haven't had a manned flight since 2011 when they retired the space shuttle tomorrow. As a way of reference, SpaceX is going to try to put us back in the manned flight business. So it's going to be an interesting day, not necessarily astronomy related, but definitely space related. Do you cover that type of topics as well? Do you go into what's going on with the, I call them the non-air breathers, the satellites and that type of stuff? Do you talk about that at all on your show?
I don't. I try to focus on the science itself, but of course people always want to know, right? People always ask in person. So I have to keep up just to, and of course it's really cool, right? I mean, whatever you might think of SpaceX and Musk, whether you're a fan or not, the stuff he's doing, it's cool.
It is cool, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and being that you call your show The Urban Astronomer, When I was living in Hawaii, the light pollution was really, really bad in close to Honolulu. I mean, it was just, you know, it's not as bad as Vegas, but very, very bright, even though they try to control the lighting in the community. But now I'm literally living in rural America, and the sky view is incredible because I don't have night pollution. Maybe the closest town where I get a little bit of night pollution is maybe 13, 14 miles away, but still looking a certain direction, I don't have a lot of night pollution. Do you think that astronomy has been, the popularity of it's been hampered because of light pollution?
The practice has definitely been hampered. I don't know, because I suppose if you go back 50 years, 100 years, let's say 100 years before electric lighting really took off, became popular, I suppose people could take it for granted. You go outside and there's just the sky is just packed full of lights. And now you look, I'm going to take this back, because people living in deep in the city where you can maybe see three stars, three bright ones, and two of them are probably planets. Mm-hmm. Then the sky is just, it's just a featureless dome, right? It's not something you think about because there's nothing there.
Right.
I mean, this is just conjecture, but yeah, that makes sense to me, actually. I think definitely.
I remember as a kid, and that's many years ago, probably 40 years ago, laying on my back in the yard at night and just, you know, seeing this vastness of sky. And then over the years, you know, you're not always looking up and you kind of forget every once in a while, like, wow, that's a beautiful night. The moon's out or whatever. But when you have that really clear night and you can see with the naked eye, a lot of stuff that it's a pretty grand view. And I think a lot of us forget about that. And I think, if anyone gets into astronomy, don't you think it's that passion is to see that view again?
For me, definitely. And I think for most amateurs, definitely. Professionals, academics, you know, maybe half of the ones I've spoken to have said, yes, it was that childhood love of the sky and just the incredible view and that sense of space above you. And for the rest, it's they started as computer scientists or as mathematicians, and during their postgraduate studies, they did an astronomy module because they needed the credits, and then decided, wow, this is really interesting, you know, intellectually.
Right.
I forgot what the question was.
Well, it's just basically it's talking about the view and the passion of astronomy, yeah. You know, and I think because I do a tech show, that's the show I started when I was doing podcasting. I have a space astronomy segment, and oftentimes I'll get an article from, let's say, space.com or something like that, and I'll read the article. I'm like, what are they talking about? I mean, they are talking about some stuff that just like, okay, you know that some heavy duty PhD mad scientist with, you know, you just kind of picture the person that made this discovery. And probably wasn't. It was probably some grad student or something. But you get this and you think they're on a whole, some astronomers are, I think, on a whole different level, and God bless them too, because they are really smart in some of the stuff that they're coming up with. Do you feel the same way when you read some of these articles?
Yes, but at the same time, what I've noticed is that these guys tend to have, it's like with any academic, they tend to have very focused knowledge, right? You talk about the work that they've been studying their whole lives and focusing on and really working hard on. They know more about that than anybody else in the world, right? They are such specialists. And then you ask them something outside of their field, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not even talking about outside astronomy. Say you're talking to somebody who studies black holes to figure out how they collide and or something. And then you ask them, so how far away is Saturn? I don't know. Or you go outside and you point to the stars and you say, can you show me the Southern Cross or the Big Dipper? And they go, I don't know.
So, you know, but it is that mad scientist thing that I really, truly love. Yeah. And I've known a few, and here in the United States, we have these things called national labs, and they really have some very, very incredibly smart people. And some of them are truly mad scientists. And I met this guy one day, and he was so brilliant, but he was yet one of these guys that could bring it down to the fourth grade level. You know, and actually, it is. And when you find someone like that that has this, you know, maybe it's like a fellow at some institute or something, and then they can bring it down to your level, I do appreciate that, because usually they are in their own element, as you may say. So from the response you get from your audience, then from the, you know, the people that are like kicking you an email here and there, what's the kind of feedback you're getting from your show?
You know, I've had one negative feedback. Which I suppose is because there's so little feedback in general, but and it was the most unhelpful comment. He said, it's boring. And it turned out he was talking. I replied and I tried to engage him, and he got a bit defensive, but it came out in the end. He was talking about one specific segment of one specific episode that had come out months earlier. So, which teared me up a lot, realizing it was just that one little detail. But for the most part, you know, people don't reach out to me, but if I do get into contact with them, they want to know when the next episode is coming out. Especially in the early days, I used to go long gaps where it wasn't structured like I do it now. There might be a few weeks, there might be a few months even, and then I'd see the listenership going down on the stats. And then I would get people saying, come on, man, I'm listening, I'm waiting,
yeah.
I want to hear more.
And I think that's a big challenge with podcasters, especially when you have a day job, you have a wife, you have a family or a partner, and you're trying to squeeze in this show that you're doing. The consistency can be a challenge. And I've always told podcasters, it's, you know, try to be as consistent as possible, because listeners build you into their lives. So at least they're saying, hey, come on, give me another episode, instead of going finding another show. show.
Yeah, I was actually very lucky. I got some great advice from one of the local, well, the lady who runs the a local podcast community. She's from the WITS School of Journalism. And she suggested that rather than just keep these episodes rolling one after the other, start breaking it up into seasons. Mm. So set yourself up, commit them, plan in advance what you're going to talk about, however many episodes, and then take a break. So you don't get burnt out and sick and tired of doing this. You have a chance to get back into enjoying it. And that's made a huge difference. I now have seasons. I just started my third one last night, actually.
Yeah. That's interesting because I always tell podcasters, if you're going to do seasons, season one ends on Friday and season two begins on Monday. So it's probably not, that probably wouldn't have worked out real well for you.
Well, that's the thing. The seasons was more for me.
Yeah, for you, right.
To keep me productive, I'd rather have a break than just start fading away and not producing at all.
Yeah. So have you then, what have you got out of the show? And that's the most important thing. You've been able to, you're doing a blog, you've been able to get started doing these interviews and then doing solo shows. But what really, you know, in the end, I always tell my listeners, I do the podcast for me, even though it's for you. And when I get tired of doing it for me, then sorry, I'm gonna quit. How's the podcast been for you?
The main thing I think apart from that big lofty noble goal I mentioned earlier, I think deep down the real thing I always wanted was to share with people what I enjoy about this. And a lot of it is getting very technical and explainy and going on about how gravity works, and I realize not everybody's that interested really, but that's fine. They're not my audience. So yeah, just getting a chance to talk to people about this sort of thing that the people in my life are now done hearing about. I've been bending their ears for years. And the other thing would be getting a chance to speak to people that I would never have dared to call up and chat to. I mean, I'm going to conferences now, science conferences, and getting to shake hands with people who are maybe not that famous. I mean, the other day I spoke to a lady who was one of the instrument scientists on the Cassini space mission. You know,
awesome.
That probe that sends those amazing photos of Saturn. Mm-hmm. The mission ended a few years back. She was one of the lead scientists, and I got to speak to her. It was fantastic.
If I remember correctly, Cassini still had an outbound. The spacecraft, did it die, or did they drive it into? I can't remember. Did they kill it, or what did they do with that space?
They killed it. Yeah,
they killed it.
The mission was over. They couldn't keep it going. It was technically possible. It had fuel and it was working, but they didn't want to just leave it there, a space junk littering the orbit. Especially since with that slight possibility of there being life on some of the moons, mm-hmm. now you're going to crash this thing on
right.
one of those moons, and any bacteria still alive going to contaminate it. And then if you find life, then you got no idea, was it us already, or was it already there?
Yeah.
So lots of reasons to, very sad though. I think we all got quite emotionally attached to that little spaceship.
Yeah. So did they crash it into Saturn, or where did they send it? I can't remember what
into Saturn.
Into Saturn. I know that for me, I followed with huge intensity the Mars rovers. And when you know, we lost a rover, it was almost like, it's almost like we're not going to be able to talk. You know, it's out there collecting dust now. But boy, it gave us a real ride for a long time, and they still are. But I think there's maybe even my lifetime yet we're going to see some exciting stuff out of Mars. But it amazes me, though, truly, though, about the amount of space discoveries and how, I guess for a better word, how insignificant we really are on a astronomical scale. We're not even a speck of sand, to be honest with you. But it's cool to be able to talk about it, even though we are insignificant on an astronomical scale. Are you a fan of space odysseys, and are you a reader, or are you more?
Yeah, I love that stuff.
Yeah, me too. I do love space odysseys and those types of. Do you think we're going to get to a point then with Musk and what he's doing that we're actually going to have a settlement on Mars at some point?
You know, I always assumed that we would, and I think with the work he's doing, he's making us think a lot more carefully about it. I'm sure it will happen one day. But if you consider that the conditions on Mars are worse than in Antarctica.
Right.
And Antarctica is technically next door. You know, it's it takes you, if you go the long way around, it's fly down to New Zealand and spend a week or two on a ship and you're there. And there's not that many people living there because it's it's warmer than Mars. There's more air than Mars. There's more food than Mars. There's water.
It's tough. I think it's
going to be. I want it so much. I just don't know how we're gonna solve those problems.
I think it's going to be victory and misery at the same time. I don't think that those early Mars missions, I think those are going to be pretty high risk. And yeah. The sustainability and all that stuff that goes along with that package. And it's kind of funny you said Antarctica. I had one listener listening to my show from down on the ice for a number of years, and he was seasonal, and it was always fun. He was always sending me email and stuff he was doing. But it's interesting to think of the differences between Antarctica being actually lush and livable compared to Mars, and it's pretty stark. Awesome. This has been real insightful. So I tell you, Alan, how can they find your show? Where do they need to go to find your podcast?
You can search for me on most of your podcast directories. Just the name Urban Astronomer Podcast. I don't think you're going to get too many false hits there. If it doesn't work, you can just go to the website, urban-astronomer.com. And I've got probably too many subscribe links directly on there.
Well, that's never going to have too many, but sounds like a fun show and gets deep into the guts of astronomy. And that's what I think some people like. And is this a show for someone that is just thinking about getting started in astronomy?
Yeah, I'm assuming you don't know that much, but that you would like to. I try to explain things as simply, but at the same time, accurately. Mm-hmm. And I hope I get it right.
Yeah. You know, oftentimes people have hobbies and passions. From a cost perspective, I'm sure, you know, you're pretty deep in it. So your hobby costs are probably a lot more than the average person. But, you know, what should someone think about budgeting if they really want to kind of get started right off the correct way in the beginning? Or do they even need to?
You know, if you want equipment to do it, and you can tell I'm not sponsored by anyone when I say this, get a nice pair of binoculars. Mm. In fact, I remember I used to have a telescope, and then it was on loan. I had to return it, and I bought some binoculars. And just by sweeping the sky with those binoculars, because it's so easy to hold, you know, you don't have to aim the thing, such a wide field, you see so much at once. I think I saw more in a single evening, more different objects than I'd seen in the course of a year on the telescope. Obviously, the telescope will show you a lot more. It's more powerful, mm-hmm. but it also takes a bit more to use. Star binoculars.
Yeah, interesting. You know, when I was in the military doing flights over Afghanistan, we would be completely darked out. And of course, the country, the lights were completely shut off. So the sky view was incredible. And I would sometimes have to sit in an observation post, and I would have on night vision goggles. It's amazing what you can see when you're on NVGs, when it's dark and you can see the amount of just stuff coming into the atmosphere that you would have never imagined. So if you ever get a chance to stargaze with night vision goggles, it's really, really awesome.
Ooh, I've got to try that. That sounds good.
It is, because you could, you know, basically the naked eye, you wouldn't be able to, you couldn't see certain stuff, but it, you know, especially during like a Leonid event, did I pronounce that correctly?
I think so.
Yeah.
Leonids, yeah.
Yeah, when you have the high, you know, high amount of impacts on the atmosphere, it was really, really cool. But anyway, hey, so Alan, thanks for being on the show. And
it was a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. And good luck with your podcast. And thanks for spending time with us here on Podcast Insider.
Yeah, thanks so much. I really enjoyed this.
All right, we're back. Mike, I want to thank Alan for jumping in on the Podcast Insider. Of course, you too can participate. All you got to do is send me Mike or Mackenzie an email, Todd, Mike, or Mackenzie at blueberry.com, and be happy to have you on the podcast. We've got some support stuff going on, and I kind of read the first topic, Mike, and I kind of chuckled a little bit. So what's up in support?
Yeah, you know, I get inspiration from other shows. but we do get this question a lot. We get, does Blueberry distribute to whatever directory or app? Do you guys submit to Spotify, Apple, and Google? Well, yeah, of course, that's what we do. But the answer is yes. Any podcast app that accepts an RSS feed for submission, Blueberry, and basically any other host, can distribute to it. All you need is an RSS feed and, you know, some instructions on how to submit. They're all kind of different. And we have you covered in our podcast manual. I have a link to our podcast promotion page over there that has links to how to get on Spotify, how to get on, you know, all these different places. And yes, Blueberry will do that or help you do that, actually.
And you as a podcaster, you can help us out here when you're talking to potential podcasters. Distribution is global for all podcast hosting providers. Doesn't matter who you host with. If they give you an RSS feed, or if we provide you one, or if you use one through PowerPress, that RSS feed, like Mike said, can go anywhere. What you're paying Blueberry for, primarily for, is number one, service, support, reputation, and tools. You know, it's really, that's what you're paying Blueberry for, is that help and the extra stuff and the ongoing stuff that we're doing in the podcasting space and updating our applications. And that is what you're paying the service for with us. So submission and where you distributed to, that is, that's equal across all to a certain extent, depending if they submit for you or not. And we believe that you should submit your shows to your distribution point so that you can control those listings via your email account versus a Blueberry account. So that's the main thing I think Mike wants also to kind of, that I want to add to Mike's support thing. But again, all that information is on the, is in the Blueberry site over at Create on the podcast promotion. And we'll have that link in the show notes. What else is up with Mike?
Let's see. You know, we get this question a lot, especially towards the end of the month. You know, hey, I'm almost out of space. When does my monthly quota update? And sometimes people get confused that, you know, say their payment date is on the 25th, but their quota doesn't update till the 1st. So for Blueberry, it used to be, you know, your quota reset on your payment date. And, you know, we decided that it's probably better just to have it at one date. So everybody's quota resets on the 1st of every month, regardless of, you know, when the billing happens. And, you know, we're pretty flexible. So if you got a one-off thing, you're doing more this month for some reason, whatever, just let us know. We can adjust that for you a little bit. But, right. you know, if it happens every month, we want you to upgrade. But, you know, if it's a one-off thing, no problem. But yeah, just know that your quota, if you're hosting with us, updates on the 1st of every month.
So I want to weigh in on this next article. And maybe, Mike, you really don't need to say anything. I take the well-being of my support team very seriously. And if we have a customer that is being abusive to our support team, and I know Mike takes it very personal as well, and if I have to intercede, and at this point I haven't had to, but recently we've had some interactions with people that don't fully understand maybe what's going on in podcasting. Maybe they don't, maybe they're assuming some things and have been a little bit over the top. So I've always said, and this is the use case I give to really anyone, get off an airplane, you go down to the baggage area and your bag doesn't show up. And of course you're pissed, right? You're pissed that your bag's not there. And you walk back behind and you walk to the bag service area. And I've always said in those 10, 15 or 25 steps, that's where I have to like turn the pressure cooker down and go in and smile and be nice and say, hey, my bags are missing. Can you help me? Cause a little sugar goes a lot farther than a little spice. And so, you know, just, I know everyone sometimes has a, we're all like trapped and stressed out, but please try to be nice to my support team. And I know that, you know, 99% of the interactions are fantastic. And then there's that 1% that, Mike, you want to drink a case of beer afterwards. So,
yeah. Well, like I said, you know, I don't want to have to use the mute button and yell at you because I'm usually nice over the phone, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not like it's a huge problem, but, you know, this week it just seems like, you know, people seem to be a little bit under stress. So, you know, please know that we didn't break it. We'll help you fix it.
Yeah, and if we did break it, we will help you fix it, because if it's broke for you, it's broke for someone else. And we're human on the other line. So I know that those of you listening are like, who was it? You know, and you're very protective of us. But it's and I think it's just a good lesson for all of us, because we're all capable of being upset at a customer support rep person. Doesn't matter if it's a podcast or your bank or, you know, mobile company or your internet provider, where you probably have the most frustration sometimes. But it's amazing. It really is on bag, because I traveled so much. When a bag gets lost, when I go in and I'm really sweet, I said, really appreciate what you're doing and thank you. And is there anything I can else help you to, you know, make you understand what it looks like? I have a picture of it on my phone. I try to, really, because guess what they do? They put you at the top of the priority list and getting help.
Oh yeah. It's, and it's really hard for us in support sometimes to not want to be vindictive. We're not, but if our day's going well, your day's going to go well as well. So,
I don't want to ever have to fire a customer. It's one of those situations where my happiness, my team is very important as well. So anyway, let's move on to more positive things. I think that was it, wasn't it, Mike?
Yeah, that's it. And like I said, it's not a huge problem. So, it's just something to think about. I know I have that problem too. Sometimes I get mad at the cable company or whatever. And I realize the person that answered the phone really had nothing to do with your problem.
Nothing to do with it, right? Nothing to do with it.
They're just there to interface with who can help you. So, anyway, good
enough. It's my job, though, to be on the other end. And there's a problem, tell my, hey, this needs to be fixed.
Yeah, exactly.
Or if it's something, whatever, Or be brutally honest with someone and say that, left click, please. Not right, left. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, we're going to get out of here. And if you enjoyed the show today, we appreciate your business. We thank you for being part of our family, part of our tribe. And if you have any comments on the show, definitely send them over. Feel free to comment on the website. We put a lot of work into making sure there's valuable information on podcastinsider.com. Please utilize the resource. Share those resources with your friends, people thinking about getting a podcasting. More importantly, if you're not an affiliate and you want to become an affiliate, and actually because you love Blueberry, you're able to promote Blueberry, there's an opportunity to make money by by promoting Blueberry services. And just reach out to Mackenzie and we'll get you on the Blueberry plan, or just reach out to us on the support form and we'll get you connected with her and she'll take care of you. But anyway, we'll be back next Thursday live at 11 a.m. Eastern on Facebook. But otherwise, we will be in your podcatcher directly following the production of this show, which is done by our Blueberry Pro team at blueberrypro.com. Definitely check them out. Sent a lot of customers over there recently that are getting a lot of fantastic help with the production of their podcast.
Yeah, they do an awesome job. Everybody have a great week.
Take care. Bye-bye.